Luke 12, from verse 35. I didn't have a church Bible here, so I didn't ask, and then I had that question. Pardon? 1045, apparently. 1045. Does that sound about right? This is God's word. Be dressed, ready for service, and keep your lamps burning, like servants waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet, so that when he comes and knocks, they can immediately open the door for him. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. Truly, I tell you, he will dress himself to serve, will make them recline at the table, and will come and wait on them. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them ready, even if he comes in the middle of night or towards daybreak. But understand this. If the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. You also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Peter asked, Lord, are you telling this parable to us or to everyone? The Lord answered, Who then is the faithful and wise manager whom the master puts in charge of his servants to give them their food allowance at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whom the master finds doing so when he returns. Truly, I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose a servant says to himself, My master is taking a long time coming, and then he begins to beat the other servants, both men and women, and to eat and drink and get drunk. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour that he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the unbelievers. The servant who knows his master's will and does not get ready or does not do what the master wants will be beaten with many blows. But the one who does not know and does things deserving punishment will be beaten with few blows. From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded, and from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. I have come to bring fire on the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled, but I have a baptism to undergo, and what constraint I am under until it is completed. Do you think I came to bring peace on earth? No, I tell you, but division. From now on there will be five in one family divided against each other, three against two and two against three. They will be divided, father against son and son against father, mother against daughter and daughter against mother, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. He said to the crowd, When you see a cloud rising in the west, immediately you say, it's going to rain, and it does. And when the south wind blows, you say, it's going to be hot, and it is. Hypocrites, do you know how to interpret the appearance of the earth and the sky? How is it that you don't know how to interpret this present time? Why don't you judge for yourselves what is right? As you are going with your adversary to the magistrate, try hard to be reconciled on the way, or your adversary may drag you off to the judge, and the judge may turn you over to the officer, and the officer throw you in prison. I tell you, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny.
Do you keep that open in front of you? Morning. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. If your treasure is here on earth in the now, your heart will be here as well. In the Bible, the heart is the center of your decision making. It's where your focus will be. It is what will guide you. It is what you will seek. It is what you will look to and fight for and live in light of. So if your heart is here, then you'll live like the rich fool we saw last week. You'll store and treasure up things here, possessions here. You'll have big barns. You'll have a mindset that says, take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. Your whole focus will be here. If your treasure is in heaven, your heart will be in heaven. You'll live seeking Jesus' kingdom, not worrying, trusting God to provide. You won't fear giving up everything for the sake of the gospel. Your hope, your reward, what you live for is not here, but there. And your heart will reflect that. What does that look like? What does it look like to seek first his kingdom? What does it look like if I have my treasures in heaven and my heart is there? How does it work out in my life? Well, Jesus teaches us in verses 35 to 59. Begins to show you what it is to be someone whose treasure is in heaven. And in verses 35 to 40, we see we're to be ready. Be ready. Everyone plans their actions in the present based on what they believe the future is likely to hold. Person who thinks that rain is likely to fall, they'll take an umbrella with them. Person who thinks a certain stock is about to rise will invest their money in that stock. A person who believes that Jesus is coming back will be ready for him, no matter when he returns. That's what Jesus says here, isn't it? Note the number of times he says, be ready, or the equivalent of it in these just five verses. Verse 35, he says, be dressed, ready. Verse 36, like servants, waiting. Verse 37, finds them watching. Verse 38, finds them ready. Verse 40, you also must be ready. Why are you to be ready? Verse 40, have a look. Because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. In other words, he will come, but no one knows when he will come. Many have tried to predict and failed, but no one knows. A few years ago, I was visiting my granddad in Vegas, and he took me to an ice hockey game. You know, grandfather-grandson kind of a outing. And they were celebrating, as it's kind of their way in the middle of a game, that the world had not ended. A man in the US had predicted that on this particular day, I can't remember the date, sometime in October, I think it was about 2012, that the world would end. And it hadn't. They were playing ice hockey, and so at halftime and at the end, they were giving out T-shirts and celebrating. The world had not ended. They were mocking and celebrating the fact that this bloke had tried to predict. No one knows. Jesus will come, and he'll come when you're not expecting it. And he'll come when you're just getting on with your everyday life. And so he says, be ready. Verse 35, be dressed, ready for service. Literally, gird up your loins. It's kind of a reference back to the Exodus and that night of the Passover we were looking at a few weeks ago, you know, with the door and the blood on the door and waiting for the angel to go over. And on that day, they were to be ready to leave Egypt. And so they were to eat that Passover meal with their cloaks tucked into their belt and they're holding on to their staff. They were ready to go. Jesus says, that's how you were to be. Ready. Ready for his return. Ready for his coming. Then he says, look, and keep the lamps burning, like servants waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet, so that when he comes and knocks, they can immediately open the door to him. Back then, keeping lamps burning through the night was both expensive and unnecessary and hard work. Unless, of course, you were waiting for someone to return. You were waiting for your master, so that when he returned, you could serve him immediately. There was no kind of, as he knocked on the door, hold on, sir, we've just got to find the matches, trim the wick, get the oil, light the lamp, and then we can open the door. No, they're ready. Door knocks, they're open, he's in. Jesus says, for those who are ready like that, waiting for him, look what he says, verse 37, it will be good. Literally, blessed. You will be blessed for being those kind of servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. Why? Because he will reward them. See what he says? Verse 37, he will dress himself to serve, that is the master. The master will then have them recline at the table and he will come and wait on them. Jesus is promising that those who are found waiting and ready will share a meal with him. And we learn in Revelation 19 that this is going to be a great wedding banquet feast for those who are waiting, for those who are ready. Jesus then emphasizes this some more, verse 38. He says it again, it will be good, that is blessed, for those servants who master finds them ready, even if he comes in the middle of the night or towards daybreak, because they're ready. When Nathan was born, my mum and my sister did not go to bed. They stayed awake, ready for that phone call. You know, first grandson, first nephew. They were ready to take that call. Even though it was towards daybreak when he was born, there was no, as I rang them, letting the phone ring. It was immediate. Yep. They were ready. Even when the hour was unknown. Jesus says, that's how you're to be. Ready in the middle of the night. And those who are will be blessed. To kind of keep emphasizing it. Understand this, he says, if the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. I mean, if you knew a thief was coming at 2 a.m. to your house, you'd be there, wouldn't you? Ready and waiting to stop him entering. The alarm would be on, the doors would be barred, the windows would be locked, the police would be waiting to catch him. Jesus says, look, in the same way, since we have been forewarned that Jesus will return at a time when we do not expect him, verse 40, we ought to take appropriate measures. But to make sure that we're among those who have been rewarded and blessed. So live now as if he could come today. Don't worry about storing up treasures here on earth. Don't worry about your bigger barns. Don't worry about making the most of life now as if this is all there is. No, live as if Jesus is about to return. Be ready. And primarily that must mean seeking his kingdom by choosing his kingdom. I mean, Jesus at this point is on his way to Jerusalem to die. And he's going to die on a cross to bear our punishment for our rebellion against God. And in dying, he enables us to be forgiven, to become part of his kingdom. And Jesus says, are you ready? Make sure that's the case. Make sure you're part of his kingdom. Make sure you received his forgiveness. Make sure you're ready to serve. So are you ready? Are you part of his kingdom? Don't leave it another day. He may well come back tonight. Are you ready? And then, Jesus shows us what being ready will look like for us now. What does it mean to live being ready? Well, have a look, verses 41 to 48. He says, be faithful. See verse 41? Peter asks a question, Lord, are you telling this parable to us or to everyone? Now, there's much debate over who the us is and who the everyone is, but strikingly, Jesus does not directly answer it. And the fact that Luke records in verse 22, Jesus is speaking to the disciples, I think it's fair to assume he still is. And so to the disciples, he says, verse 42, who then is the faithful and wise manager whom the master puts in charge of his servants to give them their food allowance at the proper time? It will be good, blessed, for that servant whom the master finds doing so when he returns. See what Jesus is saying? To live as one who is ready is to be faithful. That's the point. To get on with what Jesus has called us to do. And remember, it's not a parable, it's not literal. Otherwise, it would only refer to those of us who literally have servants at home. And although I like to think of my children as my servants at times, they are not. Some people think that this is maybe speaking to church leaders, you know, who manage and stewards God's house. Possibly. And I'm sure it has something to say. But it would seem out of context with what else Jesus is saying. No, I think he's talking to the disciples, to us. And the picture is being faithful. It's getting on with what Jesus has called us to do. So we are found doing it, verse 43, when he returns. See, we're to be faithful doing it when he returns. When I was a boy, my grandma used to babysit for us. And she would tell us to go to bed, and me and my brother would go upstairs to bed, and then we would play. We would sometimes race cars up and down the corridors between our bedrooms, or we would read, or we would just do whatever we wanted. But what we also always did was we left a carrier bag on the first step of the stairs. Because my dear grandmother always had to pick it up. And we could immediately tell when she was coming. Go. In the bed, pretending to be asleep. Every time, bless her. You can't do that with Jesus' commands. You don't know when he'll come. You just have to get on and do and be faithful. It's a whole life experience. There's no kind of, oh, I think Jesus is about to come, let's get on with it and let's start being faithful last minute kind of thing. You don't know when it's going to come. You've got to get on and be faithful throughout doing what he's called us to do. And what has he called us and commanded us to do? Well, in the context of what Jesus has been teaching them, which started back in chapter 12, verse 1, it seems to me it would mean fearing the Lord, verse 5, not man. Doing that which pleases Jesus, in other words. It's going to involve being a faithful, bold witness, verse 8. It's going to mean not worrying, but trusting the Lord to provide, faithfully dependent on him, verse 22. It's going to mean not being afraid to be radically generous, verse 33. And I think there's an implication it's going to mean caring for others, verse 42. And of course, these work out into wider areas of our life. So we're to be faithful in our households, caring for, providing for our families, helping them to seek his kingdom. It's going to mean in our workplaces, loving and caring for those we work with, being a bold witness, fearing God, not man. Trust in him to provide rather than overworking to do so. It's going to mean caring for one another. And all the other things that Jesus calls us to do within his scriptures. And you're to faithfully get on. Like a good steward. With what the Lord has commanded us to do. So that we're found doing that. When he returns. When I was a teenager. Just stories of Mark today. I'm sorry about that. But when I was a teenager, I spent my summers working as a gardener, and I'd be left at these kind of sites, and I'd have these huge areas to be cleared, just, you know, whole areas of nettles or a whole lawn to mow. And of course, the temptation as a 16, kind of 17-year-old was, well, there's no one around, and just to sit and have kind of extended breaks. I was lazy. But what spurred me on was knowing actually the boss would return at any moment. And I didn't want to be found resting, especially because he was a friend of my dad's, and I wanted to get paid. See, how much more so knowing Jesus is going to return? I wanted to be found faithful when he does, and to receive the reward that he offers. See, verse 43, blessed is the one whom the master finds doing so when he returns, because he will put him in charge of all his possessions. He could be faithful, rewarded. If you have been found faithful with what the Lord has given you to do here, then he's going to reward you with even greater responsibility in his heavenly kingdom. So are you being faithful? In your workplaces, in your home? Bold witness, radical generosity, not worrying, serving, seeking his kingdom, laying up treasures here, fearing God, not man. See, are you being faithful? Is your heart in heaven? If it is, you'll be ready. You'll be seeking to be faithful now. Not getting bogged up or consumed or focused on this world, as it were. See, Jesus then spells out the stark contrast of the servant who has stopped believing Jesus will return, and so is not ready, and is shown to be unfaithful, and is punished. See verse 45? Suppose the servant says to himself, my master has taken a long time in coming, and he then begins to beat the other servants, both men and women, and to eat and drink and get drunk. See, he begins to live like the rich fool of verse 19. It's pretty much similar language, isn't it? This servant stops living for the master's return and starts living for the now. He's not seeking the kingdom, he falls away. Seems to me it's like the seed in the parable of the sower that grows up and then is choked by the things of this world and is not part of the good soil. What Jesus is describing here is someone who was a believer, who professed faith, but has stopped believing Jesus will come and begins to live for themselves and begins to live for the now, laying up treasure here, who becomes so consumed with life here that he focuses everything on him. He beats the servants, presumably to get more out of them. And he eats and he drinks and he gets drunk. He does what pleases him. He's living for the now, as if this is all there is, rather than seeking the kingdom. And he doesn't do what Jesus commanded or called him to do. Doesn't care for the servants. Doesn't give them food or shares their food. He takes it all for himself. But verse 46, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and an hour he is not aware of. And he will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the unbeliever. The servant is thinking, Jesus hasn't come yet, so I've got a while. It's like a worker who thinks his boss is abroad or out of the office and puts his feet on the desk and starts playing solitaire. And the boss comes in, busted. Jesus will come. And he will punish those found not doing what he commanded. And he will assign them a place with the unbeliever. For they have revealed they were not his servants. Because Jesus' servants are found doing what he commanded. And friends, we need to hear the warning to be faithful. That we are then found faithful when Jesus comes. Because, friends, it is easy to get drawn into life here, to become so consumed by the good gifts that we become consumed by our families, by work, by possessions, by holidays, by health, that we forget to be ready, that we forget and live as if Jesus is not coming. And he could come at any moment. And we might have just been too busy laying up treasure here, so busy enjoying life here, that we've stopped being faithful and we've stopped seeking his kingdom and we've fallen away. Hear the warning. Now this raises a question. Can a Christian lose their salvation? That's the implication here, isn't it? And yet there are other passages, John 10, 28 to 29, when Jesus says, look, I'm the good shepherd and none can be snatched from my hand. Implying the opposite, that a Christian cannot. So which is it? And the answer is both. From God's perspective, Christians cannot lose their salvation. But then from his perspective, he chose us from the beginning of time. From our perspective, we choose to accept Jesus as our Lord and Savior, and so it can seem that we can choose to leave him. And sadly, we've all known folks who were members with us, who sang with us, who prayed with us, who sat here and listened to God's word with us, who now don't. And who sadly live as if Jesus won't come again. They live like the rich fool. Now we don't know the end of their story. But it seems for now as if they have. As if they're not being faithful. As if they're not ready. They've fallen away. Be faithful. And here's the thing. The true believer hears the warning. Hears the warning. And responds by being ready. By being faithful. And being faithful is not being perfect. It's a heart attitude that is seeking Jesus' kingdom. That is seeking to place our treasures in heaven. That desires to be faithful in doing what Jesus calls us to do. And getting on with it. And looking forward to his return. Be faithful. And Jesus kind of underlines this warning and how serious it is. Verse 47. The servant who knows the master's will and does not get ready or does not do what the master wants will be beaten with many blows. Judgment will be worse, the punishment greater than for the one who does not know, an unbeliever who has not heard or has not been exposed to much Bible teaching. They still do things deserving punishment, rejecting God, but they'll be beaten with fewer blows. Judgment still, but the punishment not as great. See what Jesus is saying? Jesus is saying to live as one who is unfaithful in light of this teaching, in light of knowing what the master wants, in light of knowing he will return and is not ready, is very serious. Be ready. Be faithful. And then Jesus summarizes his teaching, both, I think, for the faithful servant and the unfaithful. See what he says? Verse 48, halfway down. From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. And this doesn't just apply to salvation. This applies to being faithful as well. And friends, we need to hear this. Because we have been given much and entrusted with much, both spiritually and physically. Spiritually, we have, God willing, the Bible taught to us faithfully. We have opportunities to meet abundantly. There are many ways to serve within the life of the church and within the life of where the Lord has placed us. We have freedom at this time to proclaim the gospel boldly. We have many possessions. We have much wealth compared to many in the world. There is nothing. In many ways, that will hinder us getting on and being faithful. Jesus says, much will be demanded of us, much will be asked, because we have much. So are you being faithful with what you have, with the gifts that you have been given? Are you ready? Are you faithful? And then thirdly, look what he says, be warned. Verses 49 to 53, be warned. See, being ready and being faithful is serious because Jesus is the judge, verse 49. Now, of course, he's already been implying and teaching this already through 41 to 48, that when he comes, he will reward and he will punish and he will judge. But now he spells it out. He says, I have come to bring fire on the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled, but I have a baptism to undergo, and what constraint I am under until it is completed. Now, the fire on the earth is certainly final judgment. And the baptism is his death. It's Old Testament pictures of going through the waters of judgment. And Jesus is saying, look, on one hand, he is expressing this strong desire for judgment to come. Because, of course, through that final judgment, his kingdom will be finally established and seen for what it is. And all that opposes it will be removed. But he's constrained because of his upcoming death. And Luke has already told us that Jesus has set his face to Jerusalem, where he will endure the judgment of God on the cross. See, Jesus is constrained by his understanding of the twofold mission which his Father has sent him. This on one hand, that for those who reject him, the result of Jesus' coming will be fires of judgment. But on the other hand, there's this constraint that Jesus himself will experience the flood of God's wrath on the cross. For those on the other side of the desert died. for those who will receive him in faith. There's this constraint, as it were, as those who will receive him are brought in before that final judgment comes. But you see the result? You're either going to be with him or you're going to be against him. You'll either face his judgment or he will bear your judgment. You'll either be in his kingdom or you won't be. He's the judge. And he says that, verse 51, "Do you think I came to bring peace on earth? No, I tell you, but division." Hold on, but I thought the angels sang of peace on earth at his birth. Well, yes, they did. But for those upon whom God's favour rests, for those who have put their trust, as it were, and believe in him. Now, he's come to bring division and separation. The coming of Jesus would result in a fundamental separation of peoples on earth. And the clear implication of verse 51 is that that separation would be based on whether people received or rejected the message and person of Jesus. Remember chapter 11, 23, "Whoever is not with me is against me. Whoever does not gather with me scatters." There's only two kingdoms. You're either one side or the other. And Jesus is not playing at the redemption of mankind. Preaching for Jesus was not a game. He had not come to tell people it didn't matter what they believed. You know, whether they believed the gospel or not, whether they accepted the Savior or rejected him. No, he had come to bring and to force division. Decision must be made. For Christ or against Christ. For the God or the devil. For salvation or judgment. For heaven or hell. This is not a game. And if decision brought division, even within the family, then it must be so. Now, Jesus is not saying that within every family, father will be divided against son, or son against father, or mother against daughter, or daughter against mother, or mother-in-law against daughter-in-law, or daughter-in-law against mother-in-law. He's using it to highlight that the division, the separation, will be so powerful, so evident, that it would even break apart the most tightly unified human institution, family. Because of the arrival of Jesus, relationships that God created to be intensely intimate now would be characterized by opposition and antagonism. And we must not miss how extraordinary Jesus' teaching here really is. See, teachers do not normally claim priority over family relationships. But Jesus does. And there are many places in the world where a person's decision to follow Jesus means they will be cut off from their family and friends. And we've all heard of stories of such things. In other places, one person's decision to follow Christ may introduce awkwardness into the life of the family, or attention into the marriage. And these things are very difficult to deal with, as many of you know. But none of them constitute legitimate grounds for not following Jesus, for not remaining faithful or being ready. See, we simply cannot hold any loyalty above our loyalty to Jesus. He is no ordinary teacher, and his disciples may have to pay a very high price in order to follow him. See what Jesus is doing here? He's lovingly warning his disciples. Separation, division is inevitable. It will even happen in families. But this must not stop you from being ready, from being faithful to me. Because the temptation is, because of my deep love for my family, that I'll start laying up treasures here with them. And my heart drifts to here with them, rather than there with him. And I stop seeking his kingdom, and I focus on my kingdom. And instead of being concerned for them, I become over-concerned. I worry, and I seek to control, and I seek to fix. And I seek to do what I can to save my family, as it were, rather than trust and depend. And I, in effect, stop being faithful and ready. And I'm drawn to the here and the now. And Jesus lovingly warns, it's inevitable. The nature of his kingdom and judgment makes it so, but your loyalty must be firstly to him. To remain ready and faithful. To keep seeking his kingdom. To have my treasure in heaven, not here. And of course, being faithful to Jesus, having Jesus as number one, will make me a better parent. It'll make me a better spouse. It'll make me a better sibling. It'll make me a better child in the way that I relate to my non-believing family. But I mustn't give up on Jesus. Be warned. Judgment is real. Jesus is the judge. He is the one who will return and bring division. So be ready. Be faithful. And lastly, and very briefly, be wise. See verses 54 to 59, be wise. See, having spoken and taught his disciples, Jesus now speaks to the crowds. And he speaks to them and he gives them a warning. He says to them, look, verses 54 to 55, look, you can read the weather. You can read the clouds and the rain and the wind. You know red skies in the morning, shepherd's warning. Red skies at night, shepherd's delight. You know those kind of things. But you hypocrites, how is it you don't know how to interpret this present time? See, Jesus had come bringing his kingdom of God with him, and he gives clear evidence of God's works through him and through his preaching, but most of the people are ignoring the signs. And thus the members of the crowd were not hypocrites in the sense we normally give the word, someone who says one thing but intentionally does another, but rather because they give the outward impression of being people who understand the world around them, when in fact they have no clue about the important things that were taking place in their midst. Maybe that's you. You get the world, you're worldly wise, you can read the signs of the world. But you miss the most important. That Jesus is the judge, that Jesus is coming and you're not ready. You've not sought his kingdom. You've not reconciled yourself to him. You've not sought his forgiveness. And yet you come Sunday by Sunday, you hear the word. You know there's a decision to make. You know you're not following Jesus. And friend, don't forget what Jesus said earlier. From everyone who has been given much, much more will be demanded. Hear the warning. Be wise. Get ready. And the remedy, the solution is verse 57. See what Jesus says? Judge for yourselves what is right. And you know what is right. And in order to kind of illustrate the importance of doing so, Jesus then gives this little illustration that if you're on your way to stand before a judge, you seek to be reconciled with your adversary before you get there. Otherwise, the judge will turn you over and you will not get out of punishment prison, as it were, until you pay the last penny. Now, if you would do this on the way to a human judge, surely you should seek to be reconciled to God through Jesus. Before you stand before the judge. And he turns you over to judgment where you will not get out until you have paid the last penny, which you will never be able to do so. See, friend, be wise. Hear the warning, see the signs, choose to seek Jesus' kingdom. Stop living for the now. Get ready. Be faithful. Ask Jesus to forgive you. See, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Make sure your heart is right before the judge and is resting with him. Be ready. Be faithful. Be warned. Be wise. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You may have questions that you need to ask at the end of this. maybe some things that have stirred up in you, some thoughts or questions, do feel free to come and ask and chat them through. Maybe this morning you've been sensing and thinking, actually, you know you need to put your trust in Jesus. And if that is you, can I say to you, please don't leave here this morning until you've spoken to someone who you know is a believer, who has helped you to understand and pray through what it is to become a Christian. Don't leave it another minute. Don't leave it another day. You don't know when Jesus will return. Be ready. Be faithful. Do it now. Do it today.